Well, I just heard that Dr. Stan, that would be Dr. Stan Monteith, is hanging it up. Dr. Stan is the host of the show that I was probably on for 25, 30 different evenings. Typically for 2 hours, sometimes 3 hours, doing the whole show. And we began by doing shows on Islam. And the last show I did with Dr. Stan was on Paul, demonstrating that Paul was a false prophet and that most of the things that Christians revere are untrue, ungodly, the Trinity, the cross, the church, Christmas, Easter, Sunday observances, worship, Jesus Christ, Lord, that all of those things, including and especially their embracing of a New Testament, because the covenant has not yet been renewed, a second covenant, a Pauline doctrine, Paul's letters, that all of it is erroneous, false, counterproductive. And that was the last 2 or 3 hours that I did with Dr. Stan. It turned out to be the highest listenership show that he ever did, according to the email that he sent me, but also the most controversial. He received more responses to that show than any other he had ever done. But the majority of the responses, Dr. Stan had accumulated an audience that was fond of hearing conspiracy theories and that was resolutely Christian. And so they had no problem listening to me rail against Islam. But when the same evidence was brought to bear against Christianity, a lot of them had a conniption. Now, I want to thank Dr. Stan, because a disproportionate number of those who began listening to the presentations on the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, even the initial presentation, audio presentation of Questioning Paul, the first version of that book, came to listen because they first heard me on that show. And so it was a very effective means to introduce Yahweh's testimony to people who were still open-minded and willing to consider what God had to say. Yes, Glenn?
Yeah, I've been listening to Dr. Stan for years, and he certainly is resolutely Christian. You and he certainly have some common enemies, I would think. You know, he just refers to the wicked, evil people in high places as the Brotherhood of Darkness, and he's certainly touts the CFR and the Trilats, you know, as being, he seems to see them as the central movers and shakers. I personally am not so sure they are.
I don't think they are.
Yeah, but they're certainly wicked, but yes. I don't see them as the core authority.
The Council on Foreign Relations is a counterproductive, wicked, arrogant organization. They are counterproductive. I would give you that. And I would say that for much of the last 200 years, Freemasonry has been a negative influence. And I would say that those who set the agenda for the indoctrination that used to be an education in this country deserve a lot of blame. And I would tell you that America, from a political and a military perspective, is rotten to the core and corrupt. And there are some industrialists and some bankers that are in cahoots with the governing elitists. But the idea of an actual conspiracy emanating out of Adam Weishaupt's creation of the Order of the Illumes, pulling all of the chain, yanking all of the strings, and manipulating everything, it's ludicrous.
Well, I personally do think that there are actual Satanists in the high places. You know, the wickedness of the world system and the world, you know, I mean, I think there are people, and the beauty of being a liar, is that you can be a chameleon and you can masquerade as, an Islamist over here, an atheist over there, a Zionist over here, you know, and that's the advantage of lying.
Yeah, I'm going to disagree with you, in this, and that, I don't think Satan has anything to do with Satanists. Satan does not want to be known as the adversary.
Yes, but
to be a Satan is Allah. Satan is Jesus Christ. Satan is the basis of the Christian religion. He is
the point,
of Judaism.
You're a liar, a chameleon. You masquerade as being good when you're
right.
evil. Yeah, of course.
The only thing Satan wants is to be considered the Lord. Satan wants to be considered God. Those that Satan influences, those who league with Satan, present Satan as God. It's like the President of the United States saying the Islamic State is not Islamic, and then he ends his speech saying we're going to go to war with them by asking for God's blessing, you know? And the God that he is speaking of is Satan. But Satan doesn't want to be acknowledged as the adversary, only as God.
Right.
That's why you'll find him in religion. You'll find him in politics. You'll find him in militarism. You'll find him masquerading as the Lord and God over these things. That's why when he says, God bless our troops, they're invoking Satan.
And I think he's also willing to accommodate those who want to ally with powerfully evil.
But he doesn't even need to understand. I mean, there is no reason for Satan to ally with the Abominator. He's going to push people in the wrong direction all by himself. He doesn't need any help.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Who needs an adversary when you're
right.
I think
he had to ally with and possess Muhammad and Paul to cause them to be so effective causing so many people to worship the adversary as if he were God. I think that you will find him very active in their lives. But for the most part, the people that are evil for their own personal reasons.
Right. Of course, one wonders why one can see a picture of Lady Rothschild with a good set of Mendes around her neck. But anyway, as the doctor saying, he's battling leukemia now, so certainly, you know, wish him well with that, and, you know, but the,
I have to give him credit, he will bring people on
to disagree with him.
Yeah, although that was the last. I mean, when I went after Christianity and Paul, demonstrating that Paul was a false prophet and that the basis of Christianity was flawed, that was the last. He made no attempt to counter anything I had to say. He just said, you're not welcome back on this program. That said, I think, Dr. Stan, while I would disagree with much of what he has to say, I'm grateful for the opportunities to be on his program. And I think that his show helped to introduce what God had to say to a lot of people, and it certainly helped awaken people to the menace of Islam.
And you know, so by the same token, again, while it's good of people to entertain contrarians and dissenters, you know, for the sake of debate and clarification, all that sort of thing, one wouldn't necessarily expect you to have a Muslim imam on your show,
a
Sharia law preaching Muslim imam.
No.
So people are going to have on people who favor their arguments.
Yeah, but, and I never once engaged Stan in debate.
He doesn't like contradiction.
No, he would never attempt to debate me. We were in different times in our life. He was, I mean, I'm not a young guy, but I'm much younger than he is. And second, the topics we were talking about, whether it be Pauline Christianity, whether it be Islam, I knew better than he knew. And so there was no benefit for him to engage in debate, and he never once attempted to contradict anything that I had to say. That was kind of like the show that I did with Bill Deagle, where he asked me to do a show with him.
I was flabbergasted by that. if you recall.
Right, and everything that that I said, Bill Deagle didn't have an answer for any of it. But then, you know, without me there and using the straw man argument, you know, spent shows after shows trying to defame me after the discussion. But during this show, he was the ultimate deer caught in the headlights.
Well, he there's some over, if you drew a Venn diagram with the two circles that overlap, there's some, like he would be more of like a messianic Jew type, you know, along that line of thinking, but he also sees himself as a prophet and that sort of thing.
Oh, he thinks himself as the new Moses. He says that he routinely meets with Jesus, and that is in between meetings with Plendor, who is, of course, the lizard king, masquerading as Clint Charles.
Pindar or whatever.
He was consulted in the creation of AIDS by the U.S. government. I mean, he is way out there.
Yeah, sometimes, yeah. And good luck trying to get a word in edgewise, with him, too. But, and he has his buddy Tim Alexander on, who is a supposedly geopolitical analyst who pronounces Putin, Pukin, Netanyahu, Netanyahu. Can't pronounce Poroshenko, can't pronounce Merkaba, an Israeli Merkaba tank becomes a Maraca tank. And so, it's like, oh. But now, Dr. Stan the other day had a detective on named Bob Fletcher, who was berating the Russians for invading the Ukraine. I'm like, oh, you got to.
Oh, come on. Come on. I mean, come on. Yeah. I know this Russians bad, U.S. military good, NATO good. It's so yesterday. It's so ignorant. It's so irrational. It's a shame that people continue to promote the myth that the American military, for example, is a force for good, and that the Russians and Putin are the evil empire. It's just not true. Not from either perspective. It doesn't make Putin a good guy. I wouldn't go there at all. But at this point, he's a more honorable guy, a more of a peacemaker by a huge margin than is any political leader in the United States.
Yeah, absolutely. He's the adult in the room at the moment. Yep, excuse me, I need to cut and run, but I'll talk to you soon.
Bye. Okay, thank you, Glenn. Well, we've been talking about this connection between Shaul and the adversary, and how the adversary, Satan, used Shaul, possessed him, by his own accord, met with him at the flashing light that Paul met with on the road to Damascus, was Satan. He advocated the satanic agenda. As a matter of fact, when we come back, we'll talk about how Paul advanced Satan's greatest desire. We'll be back in a moment. We know that the adversary wants. And maybe you could extrapolate that to three. The first thing that he wants is to be seen as God. He wants humankind to worship him as if he were God. That's the thing that is so obvious when you read the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, particularly the Yahweh's testimony through Yashaya, Isaiah. I believe it's in the 14th chapter there. Just plainly obvious that the adversary, HaSatan, wants to be worshipped as God, and that he is directly associated by Yahweh with Babylon, which Yahweh speaks of as being the satanic whore. And he condemns Babylon based upon the religion and politics that were merged there to create false testimony. It's even the term Babel is used to speak about that which is confusing and corrupting. Babylon is that which is confuses and corrupts, and does so by way of religion and politics. That would be Satan's tool. That made plainly obvious in Yashaya 14. But what most people don't want to process is that Satan is never worshipped as Satan, does not want to be worshipped as Satan. An occultic religion is not a satanic religion. It's not. Satan is never worshipped as Satan, doesn't want to be known as Satan, doesn't want to be considered the adversary, and has nothing to do with those who would consider themselves to be satanic or occultists. Nothing. I mean, when Charlie Manson, drew satanic symbols on the walls, or when the Freemasons have their satanic symbols drawn on the footprint of Washington, D.C., there's no association with Satan in that. And that's because if you want to look for satanic associations, you have to be look at those institutions which serve Satan's interest. And they are those institutions which cause the adversary to be worshipped as if he were God. Yahweh calls Satan Lord. He uses the term Baal throughout the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, which Hebrew word for Lord. And because it explains Satan's agenda, that he wishes to lord over humankind, that he wishes to control, to possess, to own. That's why he's called the Lord. So when you see a religion speak of God as the Lord, now you find a religion that is satanic. And that would be true of Islam, and of Christianity, and of Judaism. All three use the term the Lord to speak of their God, which means their God is actually Satan. It presents Satan as if he were God by using the term Lord. But it's much more than that, of course. It's also about taking that which is the antithesis of Yahweh's foundational teaching, the Torah, and refuting it, contradicting it. Islam, Christianity, and Rabbinic Judaism do those things. And it's about counterfeiting and twisting the nature of, the identity of, the deeds of, and the words of the Messiah, Yahusha, so that he in the religion is actually opposed to what he himself did and stood for and said. Such is the case with the Christian Jesus Christ. Such is the case with the Isa and the Quran. Such is the case of the presentation of the Messiah in Rabbinic Judaism. Now, I told you that I would share with you the goals of Hasatan. Now, the first is to be seen as God. So you're only going to see him in religions where God is the Lord and the religion is opposed to Yahweh's people, and which would be Yehudim, Jews, to Yisrael, Israel, and, of course, to Yahweh's Torah, to Yahweh himself, even the name Yahweh. And, of course, you see that in Christianity, Islam, and Judaism. So, that's first. The second is that Hasatan, and this isn't so much stated, it's something that you have to deduce by pulling together everything that we can read about the adversary in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. And when you pull it all together, particularly think of the book of Job, what you find is that the adversary was one of the high-ranking Moloch. You know, he was right in there with Michael and with Gabriel. But he didn't like Yahweh's affinity for and affection for and devotion to Adam. And so he's adverse to man. We'll be back. Returning to our thought, when you are reading the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, it becomes obvious, I think, that Hasatan became jealous. The adversary became jealous. Here he was, magnificent looking. Here he was, brilliant as light. Here he was, eternal. Here he was, a leader of spiritual messengers, reporting directly to the creator of the universe. Ah, yes, proud of himself. And then God created this inferior being. He gave that being something that Hasatan did not have, which was free will. But in all other ways, this being was inferior. He was mortal. He was flesh. And as flesh, as a material object, with the soul occupying a material object, he was stuck in time. He was stuck on the earth. He was influenced by gravity and influenced by time and decayed. And, you know, it's, here God is taking this vastly inferior being. You know, it's the difference between light, energy, spirit, and matter, material, corporeal, is that it's comprised of the same stuff, but the relationship, the amount of that stuff is the square of the speed of light, E equals MC squared. And here's now Yahweh spending all of this time totally enthralled with, in fact, absolutely in love with, this corporeal being, man, spending all of his time with him. And so HaSatan slithered in the garden and attempted to say, he's just toying with you. You know, what did he really say? And he just doesn't want you to be like him. He doesn't want you to know the truth. You know, what's it going to hurt to disregard what he had to say? Tried to put a rift between Yahweh and this human creation that Yahweh fell in love with. And mind you, Yahweh had to let him in. Yahweh had to allow him to, and he and Chawa to corrupt his testimony. Had to allow him to rebel. Had to, otherwise he would never have been allowed into the garden. And so we see from that point on, particularly even in the punishment that Yahweh instilled upon HaSatan, and we read as we read through Job, where HaSatan is trying to prove to God that even the righteous man, Job, could be turned. That man is worthless, that God's fascination with his character was ill-conceived. And so HaSatan has been motivated to demean humankind and to yank him away from God. His most effective tools have been religion, Christianity, Islam, Judaism, Hinduism, even socialist secular humanism. And so that's his mindset, is to take people away from God because God kicked him out of heaven, disassociated himself with him. But also to demonstrate that humankind was stupid, that they would fall for anything, that God never should have shown any interest in them because it's such an evil, such an inferior being. That's the ego of HaSatan. So he has attacked humankind in that way. That's why within Christianity and Islam, in both religions, Satan is so bold, he has his advocates, Paul and Muhammad, admit that they're demon-possessed. It's true. I mean, read 2 Corinthians. Read the initial hadith about Muhammad's initial encounter with the dark spirit during Ramadan in the cave. Both describe the experience very negatively of the spirit being dark and menacing and taking them right to the precipice of death, not to life. Not enlightening them, not uplifting them, not empowering them, but ravaging them. They describe it as a satanic occurrence. And then both say that they're demon-possessed. And Satan is simply flaunting it. In Islam, that which is considered religious and pure and holy is halal, which is Satan's first name, Halal bin Shakar, when he's introduced to us in Yashaya, Isaiah. And, of course, it's the Lord that is presented as God in Christianity, elevating Satan to that role. Now, I began all this by sharing with you that if Satan could achieve one thing, that his favorite thing is what he achieves in Christianity, which is to have people pay attention to what happened on Passover. You know, he has it, of course, on his pagan cross, and he also has God dying, and even has a bodily resurrection, but pay attention to what happens on Passover. Because if you observe Passover and you don't observe matzah, which of course is never spoken of in Christianity, Christians don't even speak of what happened on the Shabbat following the Friday crucifixion. But if you observe Pesach and don't observe matzah, You become eternal, just like Satan. Eternally estranged from God. Because matzah is when we're perfected. Pesach is where we become immortal. Becoming immortal without being cleansed on matzah is the worst of all possible circumstances. That destines one to an eternity in Sheol, hell. That's the essence of Christianity. It is the perfect satanic religion. And it also uses the Babylonian Babel concept of corruption to twist everything God had to say, to pile the deception right on top of the truth, to counterfeit what God had to say so as to make the result look genuine when it is worthless. Therefore, if you want to find Satan's influence in the world, look to the religions that serve his interests. Look to the religions that treat him as he wishes to be treated, that cause him to be worshipped as God on Sundays, to be bowed down to as if he were a Lord. It's all true. You know it's true. It's obvious. And so here's Christianity claiming that it's a religion that is at war with Satan, when in fact it's a religion that has replaced God with Satan. That's why the Jesus Christ of Christianity was modeled after Dionysus, not after the Messiah Yahusha. That's why the Christian Jesus Christ bears no resemblance by name, by character, by word, or deed with Yahweh. That's why in Christianity the Torah is negated. That's why in Christianity Yahweh's testimony is relegated to an Old Testament, the will of a now deceased deity. That's why there's a new replacement called a New Testament. That's why the New Testament bears nothing in common with the Old. That's why the author of half of that New Testament is someone who is, by his own admission, demon-possessed. That's where you'll find Satan. It's in the religion of Christianity, and Islam, and Rabbinic Judaism. It's never in an occultist setting. The adversary does not want to be known as the adversary. And he, unlike God, wants to be worshipped. This notion that God would want to be worshipped is foul. It tells us that God is insecure. It completely contradicts the entire purpose of creation, of the story of what occurred in Eden, the story of what occurred with the flood and the salvation of Noah and his family. It is completely contrary to the covenant with Abraham and the ongoing affinity that Yahweh has for his people in place. Yahweh wants to be Dad, Father of the Covenant. And yet in religions, he is presented as the Lord, someone to be feared. Well, you can't fear those that you love. You can't worship and bow down to those that you see as a father. And so it is this corruption of who Yahweh is, what he is offering, what he wants, what he has said, what he has done, that inverts everything, creating a confused state of mind that caused so many people to believe that they're serving God when in fact their affinity, unwittingly, is to the adversary, having elevated him to God. You know, when God constantly rails against political establishments, and yet when religious people patriotically associate their God with their political entity, with their military, with their government. You find the absolute inverse of what Yahweh cares about, of what he is offering, of what heaven will be like. Yahweh tells us that if we want to engage in the covenant with him, we have to walk away from our country, and yet the religious integrate their religion and their country as if they were one. You watch a NASCAR race, and they go from a Christian prayer to a tribute to America and the Star-Spangled Banner. One seamless transition. You look at most political rallies, and they go from prayer to patriotic song. You look at most patriots, and they speak of their religion. They've always been linked. They've always been integrated. Even liberals advocating socialism, advocating their own view of man and environmentalism, they're always linked. We'll be back. So all of this is to help people have a better understanding as to why a religion like both Islam and Christianity rail against Satan, speak of Satan, and demean their critics as being satanic, when in fact the religion itself replaces God with Satan, so that the Jesus Christ in Christianity is Satan, so that the Lord God in Christianity is Satan, and yet the religion speaks negatively of Satan, and it just confuses the living tar out of people. They're unable to see why that all makes sense. But I want to make this perfectly clear. Satan does not want to be known or worshipped as the adversary, as Satan. Satan means adversary. He doesn't want to be known or worshipped by name, which is Halal bin Shakar. He doesn't want to be seen as a fallen messenger. He doesn't want to be known as a demon. He doesn't want to be seen as the red guy with horns and a tail, which, by the way, does not depict how he looks at all. He is a spiritual messenger, which means that he is holy light. If you were to see him, his entire manifestation would be brilliant, white light. That's how he's going to look. He is going to look absolutely gorgeous. But he doesn't want to even be seen as the glorious messenger of light. He wants to be seen as God. That's his whole mindset. And he has great animosity towards the satanic title. But yet covets the Lord title. So he embraces the title, the Lord, Baal in Hebrew, and rejects the title of adversary. So in his religions like Islam and Christianity, those who oppose his promotion to God are called satanic. And they rail against Satan and Satanism and Satan's influence. And it's all because the adversary doesn't want to be the adversary. He wants humankind to see him as God. And he's not creative. This is another thing that people don't understand. The Malach, the spiritual messengers, are vastly more powerful than our humans, and that they're immortal, and that they're light and therefore energy-based as opposed to diminished corporeal beings. So they're infinitely more powerful. They're infinitely more brilliant. And they are immortal. Even God can't kill them. That's why he created a place of incarceration for them. But keep in mind that while those things are true, there is one way that man is superior. That's why Yahweh was so fascinated by humankind. It's why he engaged in a relationship with humankind. It's why he got on his knees to lift us up. It's why he sacrificed so much to enable a long-term relationship with us. Because Yahweh gave us something that he did not give to his malach. The malach are Shabbat. They're in a regimen of control. They don't have choice. They don't have free will. The consequence of disobeying an instruction, an order amongst the malach, is they are barred from heaven, kicked out. They're incarcerated. They're demeaned. You know, it's the same thing that happens if you disobey an order in the army. Those 3,000 American troops that are headed off to quarantine Ebola don't have a choice. Now, if they were to say, "I rebel, I'm not going," they'll be kicked out of the army and put in prison, be deprived of their liberty. The same thing is true with Satan. He does not have free will. Man was created with free will. Therefore, man can love. But without free will, it's very difficult to be creative. Creativity is really a derivative of free will. And so what you see in almost all of Satan's schemes is not something that's creative. He never presents himself as this whole new construct. No. He tries to use what Yahweh has said. He twists it just as he did in the Garden of Eden. And he twists it and counterfeits it and corrupts it so that it serves his agenda. But it's never creative. And it never changes.